you stay and maybe join in the fun. Now the show has begun.
Yes, Dick Bentley and Jimmy Edwards will be on hand for the next 30 minutes with Wallace Eaton, Al McCogan, June Whitfield, Herbert Mostyn, and the Keynotes, all inviting you to...
I tell you, Jimmy, if others can cash in, so can we. Have you seen this stunt of using photographs of radio stars in advertisements?
Yes.
You know, so-and-so relaxing with his favorite cigarette. So-and-so always uses this soap.
Yes.
Well, now they want to use the name of Dick Bentley.
The biggest so-and-so of the lot.
Exactly. And you'd be surprised how much money there is in it. A detergent firm was on to me this morning, and I tell you, Jimmy, they offered me a packet.
Probably caught sight of your shirt. Bentley, you're not seriously suggesting that I lend the name of Jim to this gross commercialism?
What is gross about an advertisement which says, quite simply, you too can have a body like Jimmy Edwards?
I deeply resent the suggestion that it takes two people to have a body like mine. What sort of advertisement are you in?
Oh, a furniture firm have claimed me. They want to put the advertisements in all the women's magazines, you know. Why not relax in the same armchair that Dick Bentley is using?
Yes, I'd hardly call that relaxation. Honestly, Bentley, I don't find myself tempted by this extra income. I have enough money for my simple needs.
Oh, so have I. It's my expensive needs that keep me broke. And these people pay enormous sums.
I have my principles.
In cash.
I cannot be bought.
All oneers in a plain envelope.
When do we start?
Here's the proposition. A big photograph of your moustache on all the hoardings. It's a competition, you see.
A competition?
Yes, the public has to guess which half was permed at home and which half curled by a well-known Mayfair vet.
You mean I get cash just for my moustache? I'll do it.
You will?
Yes, whichever way you look at it, it's money for old rope.
Flakes Jones, the lazy bone. You'll hear him sing when the folks got in trouble. Folks all say, the guy's okay. Cornflakes Jones, gee, I wish I was him. Philosophy, he gives you free, especially when your troubles seem to double. Smart old guy, don't bat an eye. A millionaire, though the pickings are slim. Cornflakes Jones, the lazy bone. His life's a fling, holding on a golden bubble. Queer old coot, don't give a hoot. The world's his cup and it's filled to the brim. Birds flying high, clouds passing by, bring all their dreams to land. Way up in the trees, whispers the breeze. Anyone seen our old friend? Joys that he owns, he always. Lazy bones, his life's a fling, holding on a golden bubble. Queer old coot, don't give a hoot. The world's his cup and it's filled to the brim. Oh, I wish I was like Cornflakes Jones. Lazy bones, Cornflakes Jones.
It's sickening, sir. It's absolutely sickening. Fancy putting on pillar boxes little stamp machines that deliver 2 halfpenny stamps for a penny.
Why? It's Mr. Disgusted of Tunbridge Wells. Come now, Mr. Disgusted.
Yeah.
What's wrong with getting 2 halfpenny stamps for a penny?
I'll tell you what's wrong with it, sir. Every time you post a letter, in order to get enough halfpenny stamps to make a tuppenny halfpenny, you have to spend threepence.
Well, of course.
And you're left with an odd halfpenny stamp. And there's no way you can stick an odd halfpenny stamp.
Oh, I don't know. You could stick it on the sole of your shoe and make yourself look taller.
Well, Mr. Disgusted, I suppose these complaints of yours are all noted in the appropriate quarters.
Oh, are they, sir? Are they?
Oh, yes. Look what happened when that chap wrote to the papers and complained about the BBC programme The Critics. Said it was too highbrow. He suggested the critics should be ordinary people like housewives, doctors, or businessmen.
And is anybody doing anything about his suggestion?
Yes, we are, right now.
Well, this week the critics consist of Mrs. Morgan, housewife and mother, Dr. Prescott, a hard-working general practitioner, and Mr. Joe Thaxted, a blanket manufacturer's representative.
For the Middlesex area, customers above Bury St. Edmunds come under the Birmingham office.
Yes, of course. Well, this week the critics have been to see a foreign film called Speranzo di Mortadello at Studio 3. Now, Mrs. Morgan, would you start?
Hmm? Oh, yes, good evening. I am animal and fee earning.
No, Mrs. Morgan. We're not that kind of panel. We want to know your views on Speranzo di Mortadello.
Well, I never saw it, you see.
Mrs. Morgan, I arranged the seats for Thursday afternoon. You said...
Oh, but I can't get out of a Thursday afternoon.
Mr. Thaxted, how about you? You got to the cinema, all right, I know that.
Yes, but I never went in.
You never?
No, the poster outside was enough for me. That bedroom scene. I'm not a man what's easily shocked, but by gum, I were downright scandalized.
Scandalized!
The blankets on that bed were not but a third-grade cotton mixture.
But yes, but that's hardly criticism, is it?
Isn't it?
No, I mean, the blankets on the bed, they don't make any difference, do they?
On the contrary, modern medical opinion says they do.
Now, look, Doctor...
People are apt to sleep with far too many blankets on them. Get them off.
Now, just a minute, Doctor, I'm not having...
Plenty of green vegetables and one blanket only. You'll be warm enough.
One blanket! Look here, Doctor, I'd like to know by what right you're trying to ruin the blanket trade.
No, please, I do feel we're getting rather off the subject.
Belt up, you! It may or may not interest you to know, Doctor, that I, Joe Thaxted, have slept under 9 Murchison Brothers blankets all my life, and there's nought wrong with me.
Oh, there's not, eh?
Nought.
Ever had any shortness of breath running upstairs?
Well, yes, but I'm not a youngster, you know.
Just put your tongue out a moment.
Yeah.
Look, really, Doctor, please, the film, you know. The other lady and gentleman, they didn't get into the cinema, you know. We're rather relying on you.
Oh, well, yes. You may put your tongue back now, Mr. Thaxted. Well, now, you must understand that I've been up the whole of the previous night with old Mrs. Greenaway. So that what with the darkness of the cinema and the warmth, well, I'm afraid I dozed off and there.
But this is disastrous. So I'm the only one here who actually saw the film.
Well, what did you think of it?
Blooming awful.
Tithe's talking point. Once more we meet the Glums, our family of ordinary people facing life's complexities. This week their talking point is, if an engaged girl dances with another man besides her fiancé, what steps should the three of them take? So, over to the Glums.
Oh, Ron, please stop sulking. It's not like you to be jealous. Oh, I can't believe it. Is that my Ron sitting there all moody?
Where, Eth?
Ron, do be reasonable. Just because at the town hall dance I danced with Alderman Catchpole. I only danced with him. What's the harm in a dance?
I don't like it, Eth.
But it was one dance, that's all. Can't I dance one dance with somebody?
Not the creep, Eth. That's our tune.
Yes, but fair's fair, Ron. It wasn't a real creep. It was a lady's excuse-me creep. So I excused Alderman Catchpole.
Eth, you knew very well that I wanted to be excused. You knew that. I went and fetched 2 still orange aids for us, and when I came back, there you were in the arms of Alderman Catchpole. I went berserk.
Oh, Ron.
I did, Eth.
I bent both the drinking straws nearly double.
Oh, Ron, I can't stand it when you're so distant and dignified with your Eth. Oh, come and kiss me, Ron.
I'd rather not, Ethel.
Go on, give us a kiss, Ron.
No.
Oh, go on, just
no,
run.
No, Ed, I won't be coaxed while I'm sulking away.
Oh, well, now stop sulking.
Well,
Ron,
I don't want to. I'm not now.
Hello, hello, hello. Don't waste your time with him, Ed. He was the same with his food. I won't be but a sec. I've just been sent in to fetch a bottle of ink and the slop pail. Your mum's going to give herself a blue rinse.
Mr. Glum, Ron saw me dancing with Alderman Catchpole at the ratepayers' dance, and he's gone all jealous.
Ratepayers' dance, eh? Lummy, it must be 20 years since I've been to one of them. Well, I haven't exactly qualified for admission, if you catch my meaning.
Mr. Glum, I've never seen Ron like he was at the dance. His whole face was working.
I've never seen any part of him working. Ron. I'm talking to you, Ron.
Yes, Dad.
Jealousy. That's something I don't like to see in my boy. Once jealousy gets a hold, Ron, it eats its way through everything. Like, well, like Ethel's mother when she comes to tea.
Please, Dad, you don't understand. I was made to look a complete fool.
Well, that's not Eth's fault. If anyone's to blame, it's your mother and me. Ron, boy. Ron, my baby boy. Jealousy. Jealousy only leads to quarrelling and bitterness. I know.
Oh, why, Mr. Glum, did you and Mrs. Glum ever...
Yes, she was jealous over a bit of harmless nonsense what transpired in a bicycle shed between me and a certain Mrs. Wilson.
Harmless, Dad? You can hardly call...
Shut up, Ron.
Oh.
It's over. And it's done with. The point is that I was provoked into saying a lot of things I didn't really mean. Things like, I'll never look at another woman again. And I'll give up beer and so on.
You're right, Dad. I'm a chump. Eth, can you ever forgive me?
Oh, Ron.
That's it. You kiss. And for the future, remember the example of me and your mum. Trust, that's the word, the precious jewel that binds a marriage together. Mutual trust. Hello. What is it, Mother dear? Have you accidentally damaged some favourite piece of china?
What is it, Mr. Glum?
Oh, Lummy, she's found that postcard from Mrs. Wilson. I can explain that, my dear.
Wanna love until there's just enough left of me. But I wouldn't go on a loving spree with anyone else but you. No one like you. I wanna go on a hugging binge. Wanna hug until my heart is coming off the hinge. But I wouldn't go on a hugging binge with anyone else but you. No one but you. Kiss me hard, kiss me strong. Kiss me harder, kiss me long. Kiss me right, kiss me wrong. Let's go crazy by the garden wall, my darling. I wanna go on a loving spree. Wanna love, so you just gotta keep me company. Cause I wouldn't go on a loving spree with anyone else but you. I wanna go on a loving spree. Wanna love until there's just nothing left of me. But I wouldn't go on a loving spree with anyone else but you. No, I wouldn't go on a hugging spree
with anyone else but you and me.
No, I wouldn't go on a loving spree with anyone else but you.
Waiter, three more brandies and soda, please.
We haven't got any soda. I'll tell you what, I'll put some orange squash in them. Yes, it'll be all right.
I see. Edwards, chap on the wireless the other day, was binding about the way they teach history in schools these days. It's all dates. What's the use of dates? See, they only forget them. You take that chap, Henry the Eighth, now. Chap who had six wives. When did he live, huh?
I don't know, but he certainly did, didn't he?
I see what your grace is getting at. You'd like the human story behind Henry the Eighth, this sort of blow-by-blow account of his six marriages. Yes. Well, let's see now.
I was personal valet to King Henry the Eighth. Yes, throughout Henry's much married reign, I, Cornelius Culpepper, was spiller of the royal hot water bottle. How well doth I recall the joyous occasion of King Hal's first marriage.
King Henry the Eighth, the bridegroom.
Thank you. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I rise to say a royal ta on behalf of myself and my blushing bride, Catherine of Aragon. I would like to thank her parents, Mr. and Mrs. Aragon. Or Mum and Dad, as I'm now going to call them, for giving me their lovely daughter.
Verily, it was a right merry do. But little did the guest realize that but a few years later, they would again be foregathering round a royal wedding cake.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to thank Mr. and Mrs. Irving Boleyn for giving me their lovely daughter, Anne. She is so beautiful that I would fain offer a word of advice to my court. Never Anne Boleyn when I'm with Anne Boleyn.
But, unfortunately, in 1536, there I was, cutting bridge rolls again.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to thank Mr. and Mrs. Sid Seymour for giving me their lovely daughter, Jane. I think I have learnt much from my past two marriages, and if I can't make this one last, then I'm a Dutchman.
January the 6th, 1540.
Ondu, dames en heren. Here I am, looking down fondly at my beautiful bride, and
6 months later.
Well, the old grey mare, she ain't what she used to be. So, ladies and gentlemen, here we go again with Catherine Howard.
But on February the 13th, 1542, down came the axe and up went the band. I must admit that by now the confetti was getting a little gritty.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, I'm very glad to see so many of you still supporting these functions. Number six on your program is a little lady called Catherine Parr. About her, I can only say...
Henry! Sit down.
Catherine,
sit down, Henry. I'm talking.
Oh, blimey.
As for the rest of you, you may as well know that this is the last time you'll be called upon to cough up a set of fish knives. I am here to stay.
And in truth, stay she verily did, for she had a tongue like a whiplash. And so unattractive was she of person that the king did cause me to alter the royal do not disturb sign on his doorknob to read please disturb as often as possible. As I dressed him one eve in Hampton Court, I remarked on the sorrowfulness of his countenance.
Yes, Culpepper, my good page, I verily have copped a tartar this time. I would fain as lief not have married anybody. My oath, if I wouldn't fain as lief as not have. Now, how looketh I in my robes?
Magnificent, my liege. Plum-coloured sash, peach cloak, damson hose, and cherry doublet.
I am fetching, you think?
Oh, my liege, a dollop of whipped cream on your nut, and you'd be a knickerbocker glory.
Thank you, good Culpepper. And it's all to be wasted on that hatchet-faced acid drop.
Henry! Henry!
That's the wife from the kitchen. I am in the royal robing room, dearest wife.
Henry, I want a lady's maid.
Certainly, my dear. I'd get the architect to design one, if you like.
No, Henry. I want somebody to help me tidy up my apartment. The place is a pigsty. What is Anne Boleyn's bedroom slipper doing on top of the wardrobe?
Well, you see, we were celebrating the capture of Calais, and she was showing me how...
Hold your tongue! And another thing, your table manners are atrocious.
Well, I...
Gnawing chicken bones and flinging them over your shoulder.
Oh, but, my dear, I...
I'm sick and tired of picking them out of the chandelier. Do you hear? Do you hear?
My dearest Catherine, I do not like to see thee so upset. Isn't there some way I can smooth those wrinkles from your brow?
My liege, I'll go and fetch the flat iron.
Who spake that?
I spake.
Well, don't you spake until you're spiking too. What is more, Henry Tudor, unless you change your ways, I'm warning you now, I'll lead you such a medieval life you won't know whether you're on your head or your Tudor beam. So shove that in your hose and doublet. Good night!
Cornelius, she'll have to go. She'll have to go. And I think I have a plan. Cornelius, I must find a man who is minded to show his fealty towards me.
Me, Your Majesty, me. No man is more fealty-minded than I am.
Ah, faithful Cornelius. Or Corny, as you have now earned the right to be called. List to my plot.
I'm listening.
I can see that. Yes. If I can discover a strange man in Catherine's boudoir, then I've got an excuse to silence her tongue at the neck. Now listen, Cornelius, have you ever taken anything to Catherine?
Only a dislike.
Well, now, make a pretense of taking something to her boudoir tonight, and once there, wax ardent. I shall be concealed in a cupboard and will spring out at the appropriate moment.
But Culpepper, is not this a strange hour to bring me a cup of malted milk?
Oh, sweet Catherine, I am here to make love to you.
To me?
Yes, just as soon as I've drunk this malted milk.
Don't bother with that, Corny. Get on with it.
What was that?
Just a rat in the woodwork. Oh, Catherine, I loved you from the first. And now, at this moment, you have never looked lovelier.
But we're in total darkness.
Let's keep it that way. Oh, Catherine.
What are you doing now?
Just cooling me malted milk. Catherine. Oh, Catherine, it is a knife in me heart to see thee married to that gross, fat, lumbering, great bladder of lard. Oh, Catherine, let me wax ardent.
Cornelius, dost thou really love me?
I dost. And dost thou me?
I dost. And thou me?
I dost.
Never mind, Justin, get on with the work.
Then to my arms, Catherine. Now, Henry.
Oh, Cornelius.
Henry, now.
Oh,
Henry,
Cornelius.
Quick.
Cornelius. Let me kiss you again.
Henry.
And again.
Henry. Henry, where are you? Help. Oh, not again. Henry.
Treachery. So, Catherine, the rose without a thorn has turned out to be a rambler.
Henry. You said you were out dissolving a monastery.
I was, but it dissolved quicker than I expected it to. I have the goods on thee now, wife. Understand this, one more nagging word out of you ever, and you'll go for a walk round the block.
The block?
The one with the ravens round it.
So, it was all a trick. I'll have this Culpepper put to the rack.
Catherine, do nothing with this page until you are told. Understand? Otherwise... Chop, chop, savvy?
Oh, yes, my liege. Yes, Your Majesty, husband. Yes,
that's
dear.
Better.
So, Your Majesty, I may tell the man in black we shall not be needing the axe?
Not quite, Cornelius. There is still the little matter of the gross, fat, lumbering, great bladder of lard.
I didn't mean it, Your Majesty. It was just a joke. No.
Take him away, lads.
No.
Come, Kate.
Please.
Good night, subjects.
And the augmented BBC Review Orchestra bring our recorded show to a close. Those involved were Dick Bentley and Professor Jimmy Edwards, encouraged by Wallace Eaton, Al McCogan, June Whitfield, Herbert Mostyn and the keynotes. Frank Muir and Dennis Norden wrote the script, and the program was produced by Charles Maxwell. We all invite you to tune in next week at...